And this is KPCW. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's 8:06 on this Tuesday morning, June 3rd. Currently 48 degrees here in Old Town Park City under mostly sunny skies. Heber City also sunshine and 51 currently. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Good morning, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast for your Tuesday for the Wasatch Back. We're going to be looking at plenty of sunshine as we go throughout the day. That cooler air continues to settle in. High temperatures will only be in the mid-60s for us in Park City for this afternoon with plenty of sunshine. We'll see those highs climbing into the low 70s there in the Heber Valley. But overall, a pleasant afternoon to be out and about. As we go into your Wednesday, that sunshine sticks around. We'll start off with temperatures in the 30s for the Heber Valley with low temperatures right around 40 degrees in Park City, but it should be a beautiful afternoon with mostly sunny skies, temperatures climbing to near 70 in Park City. We'll see those highs climbing into the mid to upper 70s in the Heber Valley. As we get towards your Thursday, we start to see those clouds on the increase. We'll call it partly cloudy skies. Still pleasant weather with very similar temperatures. We'll see those highs around 70 in Park City with highs in the mid to upper 70s as you get towards the Heber Valley. Now, we'll call it partly cloudy skies as we go into your Friday, but Thursday night into Friday, we will increase the chance of a few isolated showers and thunderstorms moving through the area. Not a complete washout. Wouldn't cancel any outdoor plans, but a chance of a few scattered showers Thursday night into Friday. Temperatures still climbing into the low 70s in Park City. We'll see those highs in the upper 70s in the Heber Valley. Once we get past your Friday, though, we'll dry things out as a big ridge of high pressure, or Rex blocks, actually builds into our west, and that means a pretty stagnant pattern. And as high pressure takes over, we're looking at lots of sunshine for your weekend, Friday, Saturday, and into Sunday. And we're going to be looking at that sunshine leading to warming temperatures. Highs will climb from the mid-70s there in Park City as we go into your Saturday to highs near 80 by Sunday. We're in the low 80s by next week. Now, in the Heber Valley, we're looking at that sunshine leading to low 80s for highs on your Saturday. How about mid to upper 80s for highs on your Sunday? And highs will be into the upper 80s to near 90 by the beginning of next week. That's your latest forecast from the ABC Forecast Center. I'm meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Stay tuned. In just a minute here, we'll be checking in with Wasatch County Manager Dustin Graybow. He'll have a preview of this week's County Council meeting. Summit County Library Director Dan Compton has details on this year's One Book, One Community Read, and President of the Summit County Friends of Library, Sue Niblock, with details on this weekend's used book sale. Utah Open Lands Resource Technician Lead Wood Robinson with details about some recent protection efforts, including the Pear Llama Ranch in Wasatch County. Both Summit County and Utah Open Lands are financial supporters of KPCW. Taking a look at some local news now, the Park City Council continues to fine-tune the details of a new land use code that will govern future development in the Bonanza Park neighborhood. KPCW's Parker Malatesta has more on that.
Park City wants to make the revised code economically viable for developers, specifically new or future property owners that will have to pay land acquisition costs. At its meeting May 22nd, the Park City Council was asked about changing several variables in the draft code. As written, developers could build up to 45 feet if they meet defined benefits, such as affordable housing or a child care facility. The council rejected a suggestion to expand the limit to 60 feet. Existing city code limits building height in Bonanza Park to 35 feet. There was majority support on the council to reduce open space requirements for developers from 30% of a project's area to around 20%. The council also agreed to further reduce parking requirements for developers, which could make future construction cheaper. The Bonanza Park Small Area Plan outlines a vision to make the neighborhood more pedestrian-oriented with less parking near areas served by public transit. The Planning Commission will now work to implement the council's recommendations into the Bonanza Park Code. The council did not reach a clear consensus on how to regulate nightly rentals and hotels in the neighborhood, which is located in the center of Park City. Councilmember Jeremy Rebell suggested they focus on driving the right outcomes.
We should be coming up with a way to really balance the uses in this neighborhood so that it is truly mixed use and vibrant, and somewhere people want to hang out, somewhere where people want to stay when they visit town.
As drafted, nightly rentals would be prohibited under the new code, but the council was supportive of grandfathering in existing nightly rentals in Bonanza Park and expressed an openness to allowing some in future development. The proposed code stipulates that boutique hotels with a maximum of 75 rooms would be allowed. A representative from Zions Public Finance told the council that increasing the limit to 95 rooms would increase economic feasibility for developers. The council is scheduled to revisit the revised changes in the code at its meeting July 10th. Park City Municipal is a financial supporter of KPCW. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
Well, the Wasatch County Council meets on Wednesday starting at 4 o'clock. On the phone with a preview of the meeting is County Manager Dustin Graybow. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So it is now June. Did Wasatch County ever form that committee to comply with HB 356?
No, Wasatch County hasn't formed the committee yet, largely just because we have coordinated with multiple state officials and they've assured us that they were going to amend the bill so that we don't need to redistrict.
Yeah, well, technically, you're breaking the law.
I think that's more of a technical matter and one that we don't have a lot of concern about.
Yeah. Well, we haven't had that special session, right, that has changed House Bill 356. Other than that assurance.
Correct.
What's going to happen?
I think we feel like it'll be just fine.
Okay. So when are you hearing that might happen?
I think later this year, I think closer to the end of summer, early fall is when they're expecting to do the special session.
Okay. And you're not aware of any anything that can happen to Wasatch County because you're not following the law? Or are you just going to get out of jail card?
I'm not aware of any specific consequences attached to it. But again, we feel like largely it's an exercise that would be a waste of effort for all of the mayors, all of the council and staff, and just one that we're just not interested right now. Because again, really the only reason the governor didn't veto the bill was because of his assurances from the legislature that they were going to amend it to make Wasatch County not be affected. And so I think we have pretty strong guarantees.
All right. Taking a look at the agenda, the council will get a look at the first quarter budget numbers. We just heard that Park City had its biggest month ever for sales tax collection that happened in March. What's Wasatch County seeing?
I haven't seen the numbers for March yet. I think generally we've seen kind of a typical year thus far. But if March is doing really well, then that's good news for us. Generally, we tend to mirror a lot of the same thing that is happening in Park City we're seeing as well.
Okay. Let's see. The council will also discuss the proposed concrete median barriers for North US 40 with UDOT at Wednesday's meeting. Any concerns with what's being planned?
So actually, I believe we're talking about the South 189 barrier. So there are two barrier projects that UDOT is working on. So there's the North 40 ones that we've kind of already discussed and generally supported. The Wasatch County Council voted in favor of supporting that project. But these would be barriers that would extend basically from the Charleston, the 113 connection on 189 up into kind of Heber City. And I think generally the discussion has been that this is a good thing. This area doesn't have nearly as many accesses to residences or other needs like that. And you know, I personally know people who have lost their lives in this stretch of road, you know, and it's something that is necessary.
Okay, so it seems like in the past some council members have been opposed to adding the barriers. Then have their opinions changed?
So there was some concern on the North 40 section just because there are more residences that live along that stretch. And it's an access that a lot of farmers use off of the Potter's Lane, which Potter's Lane is not proposed to have a lighted intersection. And so I think there was some concern expressed in the past. They brought it back to the council for a later meeting, and the council approved it. It wasn't a 4-3 vote, so it wasn't a unanimous approval. So I think there are some concerns about the North 40. My sense is, and we'll discuss it tomorrow, that we will have less concern about the South 189 barriers.
Sure, because as you mentioned, we have seen a number of head-on collisions there on that South 89 corridor there. But it seems more of an issue of sunlight getting in people's eyes. And I guess there's not really anything you can do other than put up the concrete barriers to prevent people from hitting each other, huh?
Yeah, and I think making sure that people don't cross over into the oncoming traffic, that will have a big impact, because if you're talking about, you know, same direction impacts, you're looking at a lot less damage, a lot less fatalities. And
okay, so when does construction start on both the south and the north barriers?
My understanding is the right now UDOT is looking for feedback on the proposed plan for the South 189 improvements, and they're trying to secure funding for the North 40 sections. So I don't believe there's a specific date yet. I think they hope to begin as soon as next year on the North 40 segments, and I don't think there's a specific plan yet on the South 189.
All right. Hey, do you have any news on the widening of US 189? In Provo Canyon there from two lanes to four?
Yeah, UDOT is, I think, just bid out the contractors to do the work. They're expecting to get those back this month. And I think they expect to start construction later this year. I don't think we'll see really substantial progress on it this year, but most of that progress will come over the course of next year. And it could extend into early 2027.
Mm-hmm. And any idea what kind of impact that will have?
We do expect them to need to do two or three full closures when they blast sections of rock. We've been coordinating with UDOT. They don't have the dates yet. And once they get the bids back from the contractors will have the plan for when and how exactly they do it. But largely what UDOT is aiming to do is early morning, not early morning, maybe later morning, from 9 to noon closures. So that way people can get in and out of the valley on their way to work, and that it can be reopened by the time people want to move around for lunchtime.
All right. And this comes, gosh, I want to say 20 years after the original expansion was done?
Yeah, there's been a lot of work over the years. You know, there are people who still live out that I know that will talk about the low quality of the road prior to some of the improvements. But yeah, this will be, I think, a really significant improvement that will make sure that we preserve mobility in and out of the Heber Valley to Utah County.
All right. You'll also, the council will also get a presentation from Library Director Juan Lee at the meeting. Anything in the report that stands out for you?
Excuse me. No, I think generally, again, this is an ongoing portion of our series of previewing to the council and to the public kind of general operations of what are all the things that library does. I think generally what Juan, I think, is really great at sharing about is that the library is more than just a repository of books. Juan likes to use the analogy that it's kind of the community's kitchen, that people get together, they talk, they work on things together, that our meeting space is as much in demand as our books are. And we really feel like a library is a really valuable way of connecting portions of our community, which is a really important aspect of what I think we will be doing as a county.
Yeah. What I saw that kind of stuck out for me was the digital use exploding, everything from audiobooks to films, ebooks, and e-magazines. Is there a request now for more money in order to, you know, serve the demand?
I think generally, yes, there's always a need for more demand. But what we have been doing is shifting some of our existing budget away from physical media and into digital media. That provides the opportunity for us to kind of leverage that interest. And it's been a kind of a consistent trend over the last several years.
All right. The council will also hear from the Senior Center. Again, just a kind of a general update here. There was no staff report in the packet.
Yeah, I think it's really just acquainting people with the services that the Senior Center offers. And Mike Winward is an excellent director, and I think does a good job of trying to make people feel like the Senior Center is not a sleepy place. It's actually a pretty fun place, and they do a lot of really cool things.
All right. Let's see. The council will also consider adopting a new mission, vision, and value statement. Didn't you just do this a year or so ago?
So when I became county manager, we discussed some minor modifications to our mission, vision, and value statements. What we have talked about this year since our retreat, I think it was February is when we met, was kind of some more significant changes. And what these are, I think, is not really to change the direction of the county, but to revise the statements in a way that I think better reflect, are more succinct and better reflect some of the values that we've already really espoused and promoted, but state it in a more direct manner.
So can you give us an idea of what that looks like?
Yeah, I think the proposal, so we've talked about it with the council a couple times now, and we're actually planning on talking about it more in the future. But I think an important aspect is that the new mission of the county is to cultivate the better nature of our community. Counties have an interesting challenge in that many organizations have a limited scope of services and can be very direct about what they want their organization to accomplish, whereas counties and cities, for that matter, offer a broad range of services that cover a wide set of needs. But we feel like this mission really encapsulates every single thing the county does that is in the interest of promoting the better nature of our community. And I think it resonated a lot with the council and with staff that we've previewed it to. So I think we feel like we're on the right track. We're also looking at additional values. So in the past, we had a kind of a value statement. What we're looking at now is four specific values and also a vision statement that is just more succinct. And so what we're hoping to do is get the council's approval with it, and then we'll kind of do a rollout to a larger community on that. And we're also planning on meeting with Heber City and discussing with them later this month.
Great. The council will also look at an ordinance that imposes a transient room tax on short-term rentals. And it sounds like this is something that the state legislature allowed through some legislation this year. That couldn't be done before, huh?
Yeah, so this is a new proposal, and you know, maybe some of your listeners have followed it, but the state was looking at changing transient room tax statewide, and instead of just implementing a statewide 0.5% increase, what they did is a statewide 0.25%, and then have heavily encouraged all of the counties to adopt the other newly authorized 0.25%. And so in our meetings with UAC and other stakeholders, they've all heavily encouraged every county to adopt it, largely so that there is not this, the competitive advantage across counties doesn't really shift, that these funds are now available to do more things than what previous transient room taxes were available. And they're more flexible, and there's a new grant that's only eligible for someone to apply to mitigate some of the impacts of tourism if you implement this particular sales tax.
So how much can you add to the TRT tax?
It's an additional 0.25. Yeah. So Wasatch County has a 4.25%. We would be going from 4.25 to 4.5.
Okay. And how much money do you expect that to bring in to the county coffers?
We think it'll be about $700,000 annually in that transient room tax revenue. Now, I think it's important to emphasize that this is a tax on short-term rentals and hotels. So this is not something that our residents are paying. These are visitors who are coming to our hotels and short-term accommodations.
Okay, so is it the same for short-term rent? I mean, a hotel and an Airbnb?
Yes, largely if those short-term rentals are in compliance, they should be. And Airbnb does collect transient room tax. And that's one of the things that we can look in for is compliance with both business licensing and with this tax compliance. And there are a number of software suites out there that help in that process.
Yeah, I was going to ask, I mean, any idea how many short-term rentals are maybe doing, you know, business under the radar?
You know, I don't have the number offhand. And we know that it does happen. And I think largely this is just lack of information. People who own houses aren't aware that they need to register, that they need to get a business license in Wasatch County, and that business license is part of how we ensure that they're paying the appropriate taxes. So I don't know the number, but I think generally we collect a lot of transient room tax from Airbnb, and so I think we do have a lot of compliance as well, though.
All right, and any idea how the $700,000 will get spent?
Generally, we use our transient room tax to support there are basically two categories of uses in the transient room tax state code. There are required uses and there are authorized uses. The new bill kind of simplifies the way in which how much you have to use on the required uses and adds additional options to the additional uses. So what we have been using it for is supporting our tourism, our Heber Valley Tourism Economic Development. We support some recreation activities through our Parks and Rec. And we also use it for some mitigation. We support our search and rescue. So all of those things are things we will be discussing. Largely, we won't start collecting this tax until the fourth quarter of this year. So it won't really affect our budget all that much until next year. So it'll really be through the 2026 budgeting process that we'll make specific recommendations for how to use these funds.
All right. Hey, finally, before I let you go, I wanted to ask you just talk a little bit about how Wasatch County handles recycling. I mean, do you have curbside pickup?
So we've talked about this a few times with our Wasatch County Solid Waste Special Service District. And largely, the direction from the council in the past has been not to go into first-party offering of recycling services, because there have been, in the past, some recycling services. I understand that there are some pressures on that industry, and it's a challenge for anyone that undertakes it. So we don't have it right now. We have talked a little bit about it in the past, though.
Yeah, as you may have heard, Recycle Utah is having to leave its location in Park City next year. Park City and Summit County now proposing some neighborhood recycling collection centers rather than a regional diversion and transfer facility. I'm just wondering, I mean, is there any opportunity here to perhaps do some kind of regional facility with Wasatch County?
I think it's certainly an option. It's not something that Summit County has reached out to us before on, but I think we're open to looking at it. And I think if it makes sense for, our organizations, I think it could be a good opportunity to take advantage of some economies of scale.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention, Dustin?
No, not today.
All right. Appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's Wasatch County Manager Dustin Graybow. The Friends of the Summit County Libraries is hosting a used book sale this weekend, and the One Book, One Community Read has been announced. In the studio with details, I have Friends President Sue Niblock along with County Librarian Dan Compton. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Sue, let's start with you, the Friends of the Library member sale. When and where is that going to happen?
So the sale will be at the Kimball Junction branch this weekend. It starts Thursday from 4 to 7 p.m., and then Friday and Saturday from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Thursday is an early look for Friends of the Library members only, but anyone can come because you can join on the spot in the foyer. We'll have people there to help you, and it's only $10 to become a member.
Okay. Are you still looking for volunteers to help you out?
We actually are. We have people for Thursday. We're a little short on Friday and Saturday. We recognize that there's other things going on in the community, but we would love to have more volunteers Friday from noon to 6. It's only 2-hour shifts, and Saturday between 10 and 2. And you can sign up easily by going to our website, going to the library's website. We've got information on signing up.
Okay. Any idea how many books you've got to sell?
I would say in the thousands. Would you agree, Dan?
I would agree. There's a lot.
And where do the books come from? From all of the library branches that people donate and then brought to some kind of central warehouse? Or?
Yes. Kimball Junction is definitely the central hub for all the donations because we actually have the storage space for them. And anytime someone brings in a donation and we may already have the book in the collection, so we don't add it, so we put it towards the sale.
Okay. How much you sell them for?
We have some pretty bargain basement prices for our book sale. Basically, I think it's going to be, anywhere from a quarter for a kid's paperback up to, a whopping $2 for hardcover. We also have music, so, some CDs, DVD series. We'll also have audiobooks for sale as well. So definitely, bargain prices.
Okay. And how many sales do you do a year?
Normally about twice a year. Our last sale was in September, and so now, it's time for another one. I also wanted to mention, Leslie, because sometimes people wonder, as Dan mentioned, people drop off their books to donate to us at the Kimball Junction branch. What happens to their books when they drop them off? So our first thing is to try and sell them at the book sale. We also give away books. We actually just did a shipment in April to an orphanage in Tijuana. And our last resort, if the books cannot sell or if they're just not in great condition, we will rip them apart and we will take them to the recycle center.
Okay. So the money you expect to raise, about how much?
We normally raise about $3,000. We are a small nonprofit. We only have about 110 members. And this is our big fundraising event for the year that we then use that money to help Dan fund the things that he needs to do.
Okay, and what are you looking to fund, Dan, that's not in the budget?
Well, one example of what the Friends support is the One Book, One Community program that I am here to speak about today. Often bringing in an author is really expensive, and we couldn't do it without their support.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the other programs that it goes toward?
So we also have the Great Decisions program that's been a huge success. We've been getting about 75 adults to come to that every week, and that runs usually about February through mid-April. And they fund the books for that program that is organized by the Foreign Policy Association, and that has been just a really successful adult program at the library.
Okay, how do you register for that?
Just through our website. It typically will just be towards the beginning of the year is when you can start to register, because we get the syllabus, I guess you would say, mm-hmm. or the, you know,
right.
at about that time, and we try to run it end of January, beginning of February through mid-April.
Okay. As you mentioned, we've got another One Book, One Community Read. Tell us about this one.
So this year's selection is a book titled Fire Weather by John Valiant, and it's about the 2016 wildfire that hit Fort McMurray in Alberta, Canada, and it forced about 90,000 people to evacuate their homes on really short notice. It was a tragic fire, and this book looks at kind of the history of the fossil fuels industry and how our climate is changing and how these fires are getting more and more commonplace, even as we've seen here in our own community, like with Pine Brook a few years ago, with the Parley's Canyon fire, it forced about 8,000 people to evacuate their homes. And then last year we had that Yellow Lake fire that was in Wasatch County that burned about 33,000 acres. So these are some issues that we on the committee felt were really important to address and have the community discuss. And we were really fortunate to get John Valiant to come speak to the community. He'll be visiting us at the end of July. So it's on Tuesday, July 29th at 7 p.m., and that will be held in the Jim Santee Auditorium at the Park City Library. He will speak to the community. And there will also be a lot of supporting events leading up to that, especially during the month of June.
Okay. Before we get to those June events, how was the book selected? You mentioned a committee.
Yeah, so there's a committee of librarians from the Park City Library and the Summit County Library. And this year it was actually a community member that recommended Fire Weather to us. And we took it very seriously and really thought it was timely and relevant. And so that was the book we ended up going with.
All right, so kind of everybody reads the book and it's like, oh yeah, this is the one?
Yep.
Yeah, okay. And when does that decision get made usually?
It's quite a process. It usually starts in the fall, and that's when we start suggesting titles and reading them. And then a lot of that work is honestly just trying to find an author that we can afford to bring in and working with their agent to try to make things work. And again, like we said earlier, we could not do this without the support of organizations like Friends of the Library. There's just no way.
Yeah, what do they charge?
It really varies by author, but typically it's usually about $5,000 just for an honorarium.
Okay, plus lodging, airfare,
and lodging and travel expenses as well.
Yeah, all right. So let's talk about first, how can people read the book? I know that you always buy extra copies. Yeah.
Yeah. So both libraries will have plenty of copies available to check out. Actually, I looked the other day, and I do think all of our physical copies were checked out at the Kimball Junction Branch Library. We had a couple in Colville and Camas. But the beauty of this is we have it unlimited right now on Libby. So for both libraries. So if you go to Libby, you should be able to get the ebook and audiobook right now with zero wait time.
Gotta love that.
Yes.
And you mentioned you got a number of events coming up. Tell us about those before Mr. Valiant arrives.
Yes, thank you. So definitely the first one I want to promote is tomorrow afternoon at 2 p.m. And this will be at the Park City Library in the community room. Professor Ondereg is from the University of Utah and will be speaking about the title of the talk is Illuminating the Future of Earth's Forests Under Climate Change. So Professor Ondereg is with the School of Biological Sciences at University of Utah. He's a world-renowned climate scientist and director of the Wilkes Center for climate science and policy. So that should be really interesting. After that, on Tuesday, June 10th at 5 p.m., also at the Park City Library in the community room, we'll have Maddie Nelson from, she's the open space supervisor at Basin Rec. And the title of that program will be Fire Resilient Landscaping for Safer Spaces. So that's another great program coming up. The county is doing a huge safety fair program on Saturday, June 28th from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. And that'll be over in that information center parking lot, like where Hugo Coffee is. So they're going to have like a big fire truck there. We'll have the bookmobile there. And a lot of entities, organizations will be there talking about safety. Kids can come. It's a family-friendly event. They'll have like a bike safety, a bike derby, free face painting, food trucks, all that kind of stuff there. So that'll just be a good way for kids, especially to get introduced to safety with fire and things like that. And then the last supporting program will be on Monday, June 30th at 6 p.m. That'll also be in the community room at the Park City Library, and the presenter is J. Bradley Washa. He is an assistant professor of wildland science at Utah State University. He also is a wildland firefighter. We actually have a backup date for his program, just in case he gets called out to fight a fire this summer. But the title of his program is Learning to Live with Wildland Fire on the Wasatch Back. So he's just going to be looking at what's addressed in the book, and then also are what we deal with here in this community. So those are all the supporting events we're really excited about this year, and I think it's a great opportunity, and we hope you're able to participate and get a hold of that book.
Okay. Hey, I want to ask you, I mean, because what planning is happening with the possible move of the library into the Skullcandy building?
Well, so far, we've met with some architects and had those initial discussions, but some of it's up in the air right now because I'm not sure the situation with Skullcandy and if they're going to be staying or going, and if the county's going to be able to occupy the whole facility or just the lower level. The library would be on the lower level. That's the plan right now. I'm being told maybe it's possible next year that the library could be moving, and I think that's the plan.
Yeah, that's very exciting.
Yes.
All right. Sue, anything else or Dan you want to mention about all of the activity happening?
I just want to really encourage people to come to the book sale. It's a great way to get started on your summer reading list. All of the money that we get from the book sale, all of the proceeds goes towards helping the Summit County Library, which is not just the Kimball Junction branch, but it's also Colville and Camas. So we do make a concerted effort to fund things for all three branches.
Yeah. Definitely. I just want to thank the Friends of the Library for their continued support, and really again encourage everybody to read the book Fire Weather this summer. I think it's a really important book and a great one to discuss as a community.
Okay. Summit County Library Director Dan Compton, along with Sue Newblock from Friends of the Library. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
On the phone now with an update from Utah Open Lands, I have Resource Technical Lead Wood Robinson. Good morning, Wood.
Morning, Leslie. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, first introduce yourself and tell us what it is that you do for Utah Open Lands.
Sure. So my name is Wood Robinson. I am the Land Protection Resource Specialist over here at Utah Open Lands. And what that basically has me doing is helping with our land protection team in identifying the conservation values on potential conservation easements and kind of cataloging and explaining those in our long-form baseline documentation. So I get to go out on these beautiful new conservation properties and, you know, walk them and catalog all of the biological diversity and any potential threats to the conservation values on the properties.
Okay. Well, before we get into some of those protection efforts, let's talk a little bit about the major fundraiser for Utah Open Lands, the annual Portraits of Preservation Gala. Are tickets on sale now?
They are. Folks can go to utahopenlands.org. The event is in celebration of our 35 years of conservation work. Features a barbecue dinner and a social hour. It's all $175, which helps Utah Open Lands keeps the lights on and our good work going forward. And it's on August 23rd, beginning at 5:30. And it'll start with a really cool demonstration of a horse at liberty. Our executive director, Wendy Fisher, her horse D'Artagnan, will be at Liberty with Wendy and Marissa Fenwick, our conservation land protection manager, to show kind of the training rituals that horses go through to create that really special bond between horse and trainer.
And where's the event going to be held?
That's going to be at High Ute Ranch.
Ah, nice. Okay. Let's see. Let's talk a little bit about some recent protection efforts. The Pear Tree Llama Ranch. What's the status of this?
So it's still in progress. Wasatch County Open Space has approved $750,000 for the 37-acre property at the entry corridor of Midway. And a formal recommendation has been issued by the Midway Open Space Committee, which will move forward to the Midway City Council, pending their going to the property and a discussion, which is set for June. We think this is a really important conservation property. It hosts a number of scenic and agricultural characteristics that we think are fundamental to kind of the cultural fabric of Midway and the Heber Valley. We've also seen a silver fox on the property, which is just a unique type of red fox that is really quite stunning. And so we're, Utah Open Lands is seeking more private funding and also a agricultural land easement through the Natural Resource Conservation Service to fund this in addition to the $750,000 from Wasatch County Open Space.
Okay. Silver fox, I never even knew there was such a thing.
They're pretty neat. I hope you get to see one sometime.
Okay. My understanding is that there is a meeting June 4th. Is this the Midway City Council or the Midway Open Space Committee that will make a final vote?
That'll be tomorrow? Midway City Council.
Mm-hmm. Okay, at their meeting tomorrow.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. What's the latest with the Beard Family Agriculture and Fen Preserve?
Right, so Dr. Beard is a really fascinating fella. He lives up in Willard, in Bucks, Elder County, right at the foot of Willard Peak. And his 37 acres, he's been keeping for... You still there? Sorry.
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, sorry, I missed you there for a second. It's right at the foot of Willard Peak, and it is a stunning 37 acres that hosts some 16 springs, a number of fens, and a healthy grazing operation that we placed in conservation easement at the end of 2024. It's really something else. Dr. Beard has hosted a lot of educational initiatives to kind of showcase the fascinating ecological processes that fens and wetlands can provide along the Great Salt Lake.
So explain to us, what is a fen? It's spelled F-E-N.
Yeah, so they're nutrient-rich upwellings of groundwater that create a very peaty soil. So sometimes when you see a wetland along the lake, particularly at the foot of a mountain, there's this great upwelling of groundwater that pushes the groundwater up and builds this peaty soil on top of it. And it's a really fascinating carbon sink that hosts a whole array of incredible wildlife.
Okay. And this conservation easement was actually donated by the family. Is that unusual? It seems like so many people are looking for the tax break.
So it is, I wouldn't say that it's unusual. It's, I would say for every conservation easement, for every 10 conservation easements that we establish, maybe half or a little over half are full donations. The really nice thing is that it's a really charitable thought that's going into this, because what landowners are essentially doing is donating the development rights of their property in perpetuity to Utah Open Lands, because they recognize what an incredible value the things that they have been blessed to possess provide for the community.
Yeah. So we hear so much about, you know, the budget and tax cuts and such. Are you aware of any legislation at the federal level that could change the tax breaks that conservation easements can bring to property owners? Or is that in any kind of danger of, you know, not happening?
You know, I can't really speak to what our legislators have in mind. I know that they have, there have been initiatives to try and contest the perpetuity of conservation easements, but not necessarily the tax deductibility of them. I would encourage you to talk to Wendy Fisher, our executive director, who's one of the foremost agents in the country about those tax breaks.
Okay. Will do. And there's another preservation effort, the Bear Lake Willis Family Sage Grouse, Select Protection.
Right. So we have two really great conservation easement projects along the shores of Bear Lake. One is on the east side, 480-some acres, the South Eden Ranch. We already have an agricultural easement on the north side of what is about to be established through NRCS. And it's really a stunning property. It's it's got agriculture, or I should say pasture land, right up against the lake, a huge sagebrush hillside, and some riparian corridors that host an array of wildlife. And then also on the southwestern portion of the lake is the Willis Family Sage Grouse Lake Protection Initiative, which is a group of the Willis family having applied for the same program through NRCS to protect an active sage grouse lek, which is a really incredible thing to be doing.
Okay, well, we need another vocabulary lesson. What's a lek?
A lek is the dance floor for sage grouse. So it's an incredibly important area for their continued population health. It's where they perform their yearly mating ritual in the early spring.
Very cool. Okay, let's see. Paid parking at Bonanza Flat went into effect yesterday. At this point, I'm sure we don't know how it's working yet. But why was this something that you felt needed to be done?
Well, Park City voted to initiate it, and the truth is that most recreational areas in the Salt Lake City area and across the state of Utah have some form of paid parking. So what we're doing here is trying to manage the conservation values that sometimes can be somewhat at odds with one another. You know, the parking area at Bonanza Flat is small, and the area of Bonanza Flat has carrying capacity for the amount of hikers and bikers and dogs that it can happily host at any one time. What the Park City City Council voted on was to allow Park City locals to receive free parking in recognition of the $25 million open space bond that the voters paid for, accounting for just under two-thirds of the cost of Bonanza. I think that the reality of this is that this is going to be the paid parking initiative at Bonanza Flat is going to be a work in progress. I doubt that the status that it is right now is going to be the status that it will be in 5 years. And we recognize that a lot of people are not happy to have to pay for an amenity that they felt they paid for. And we recognize that and are just going to be trying our best to manage that in a holistic and a kind way.
Yeah, and I understand that because I have heard already that those who maybe donated to Utah Open Lands to help purchase the property sort of feel like they're entitled to free parking. I guess, is that something that you're working on, maybe providing free parking passes for those who may have made a significant contribution, not just those, you know, that maybe gave 20, 50 bucks?
Yeah, you know, it's hard because the folks that are getting free parking right now, it was a part of a bond, you know, so they voted on it. And I think that is to be commended. The folks that elected to donate, you know, $10,000 aren't necessarily reflected in that. The question remains how to kind of handle that logistically. And that's something that we're working on right now with Park City in the Rangers up there.
Okay. Finally, just can you give us an update on that connector trail between Hyute and Mid Mountain Trail? This is going to be behind Ecker Hill Middle School.
Yeah, it's set to, you know, begin construction in early July. Three Springs Land and Livestock is currently running cattle on the better part of the ranch, which is a really cool initiative that we're putting forward to try to provide a little bit of proof of concept that regenerative agriculture can coincide with recreation and wildlife conservation values. But that connector trail should begin construction on July 1st.
Okay. Hey, anything else you want to mention?
No, I mean, I would encourage folks to go to utahopenlands.org and see if they have the means to help support our conservation initiatives. We do a lot of really great work here at Utah Open Lands. And if anyone is interested in seeing some fascinating demonstrations of a horse at liberty on August 23rd, please do consider buying tickets to our Portraits of Preservation Gala.
Okay. Wood Robinson, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Leslie.
Wood Robinson again with Utah Open Land. Well, Intermountain Park City Hospital is planning a $40 million expansion project to double the size of the cancer center and increase its emergency room and surgery services to 16,000 square feet. A groundbreaking ceremony will happen June 12th. The Intermountain Park City Hospital opened in 2009 as a full-service community hospital. Since then, it's undergone significant expansion with the addition of an ICU in 2013 and the Blair Education Center and Live Well Center back in 2017. Endoscopy and expanded cardiology services and a pediatric unit have also been added. CEO of Park City Hospital, Lori Weston, says the next expansion will add more services for the growing community.
We're adding two surgery suites. We're also going to shell two, and then we will be adding two endoscopy suites as well. Our imaging services will be expanded. We'll have PET CT. We have a mobile right now, so we'll be bringing that in-house. Our laboratory will be expanded as well.
In addition, the existing 5,000-square-foot cancer center will double in size, a new medical oncology clinic will be added, and the number of infusion suites will increase from 4 to 18 to serve about 1,500 patients a year. According to Intermountain Health, 1 in 2 men and 1 in 3 women will be diagnosed with cancer in their lifetime. Hospital data says 500 new cancer cases are diagnosed each year along the Wasatch Back. Weston says the new cancer center is a response to that need and will eliminate the stress of travel by offering a comprehensive patient center program locally.
Our cancer center will be expanded to include a linear accelerator to do radiation therapy. Right now, we are doing infusion and chemo at both of our hospitals on the Wasatch Back, Heber and Park City. We also have medical oncologists that see patients. Both hospitals will be doing inpatient appointments starting this month for medical oncology, and radiation oncology will come when the cancer center is open.
The center, she says, will be able to treat up to 90% of all Wasatch Back cancer cases, except for those that are highly complex. Not all cancer surgeries can be done locally, she says, but treatment will be coordinated with Intermountain Medical Center in Murray or LDS Primary Children's and Utah Valley Hospitals. Weston says they're also building their cancer survivorship offerings.
We'll be able to treat from diagnosis to cancer survivorship. So people that are, once they're completed with their cancer treatments and are on the path to recovery, our LiveWell Center will house cancer survivorship services. We currently offer those right now. That will include massage, acupuncture. Our dietitians are oncology trained, and also rehab services for balance and motion, getting people back to where they were prior to their cancer journey.
She says the cancer center is expected to open in the second quarter of 2026. The ER and surgery services should be open by the end of next year or early 2027. The public is invited to the June 12th groundbreaking ceremony at 9:30 a.m. on the backside of the hospital.